Om Agnaturanda Sya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Ayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sya Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakans Vitam Scha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Brindavaneshri Prishubhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhuvyevacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So thank you for coming. I guess we should start with asking whether we should put the fan on or not. How many want the fan on? How many don't want the fan on? Okay, we won't put the fan on. This is the old GBC conference room, so that's why it seems whatever it seems like. Many fights have gone on here. And as I said before, there may be a few entities still hovering around here. So I guess this is for taking attendance or something? Yes. Is that right? What happens if you don't, if you're absent? So we'll take attendance. At least I can learn some names here. Ajay. Did I get that wrong? Aruda Devi Dasi, Bhakta Sanjay, Bhakta Avatar, Bhaktin Avin, Bhakta Avin, Dhruva Das, Ishana Das. Usually they're absence of the second day. Leela Madhuri Devi Dasi. Madhva Kantadas, Mahodari Prema Devi Dasi, Pushpa Gopal, Radha Devi Dasi, Sadhana Dasi, Shaimahari Das, Vidvan Garanga Das, Bhaktin Andrea, and Bhaktin Christi. Anyone here whose name I didn't call? Snuck in. What's that?
Krishna Madhuri.
Yes, Krishna Madhuri. So we can begin by reciting one of the prayers to the six Goswamis. Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajanan Nandena Madhvaliko Bande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopalago. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Shri Sanatana Goswami, Shri Rupa Goswami, Shri Raghunath Bhat Goswami, Shri Raghunath Das Goswami, Shri Jiva Goswami, and Shri Gopal Bhat Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendent loving service of Radha and Krishna. So again, thank you very much for coming. This is a 5-day course, is that right? Because in between is Lord Nityananda's appearance day, which is on February 25th. During this time, we'll try to cover as much in part one as possible, maybe a little bit pertaining to part two. How many devotees here have read the Nectar Devotion at least one time? How many have read another book by Dhanadhara Maharaj called The Waves of Devotion? You only read because I gave it to you. So that's a very nice book. Prabhupada wrote the Nectar of Devotion around, I guess it was 1970. I joined the movement in 1968 in Buffalo. And at that time, we had a copy of Ban Maharaj's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So my temple president told me I shouldn't read the book. So that was the first book I tried to read in the movement. Because at that, right when I moved into the temple, or right before that, we had gotten a little blue Bhagavad Gita. That was the only book beside the three Srimad Bhagavatams that Prabhupada had brought over when he came to America. We didn't have many books, and even before I moved into the temple, I had already had memorized the little blue Bhagavad Gita, and I had read the Srimad Bhagavatams. So I was looking for some book to read, so I started to read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So at that time, I was convinced that I had already reached the bhava platform of devotional service. So I had written to Prabhupada a letter asking him, how does bhava turn into prema? Because I figured within a week or two, I'd probably be out the prema bhakti platform, so I wanted to make sure I had all the symptoms right. So Prabhupada wrote me back a fairly long letter describing preaching about how we should go out and do Harinam every day in Buffalo, where I was. And at the same time, then he wrote to me that how in Buffalo, that in San Francisco, in just, oh, they just had a Rath Yatra there, and 10,000 boys and girls were dancing and chanting in full spiritual ecstasy. That the boys and girls in your country are generally good souls. That's why they've taken birth in such a nice country. So now they should try to utilize everything they have and engage in Krishna service. That will make their whole lives complete. That I've heard in New York, in just 2 weeks, they've distributed 3,000 copies of Back to Godhead, and that in Buffalo, you're also distributing Back to Godhead very nicely. So please continue in this way, and your success in life is assured. That as Krishna sees that you're working seriously to help bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then he'll bestow all his blessings upon you. That Krishna, he's never ungrateful for our efforts to serve him, rest assured. Regarding your question, how does bhava turn into prema? Actually, Prabhupada wrote the word bhava shakti. How does bhava shakti turn into prema? That there's no need to trouble yourself over such advanced topics at the present time. But shortly my book, Nectar of Devotion, will be coming out and you can read about it there. So that was Prabhupada's reply. How does bhava turn into prema? So by the end of this class, we should all know how bhava turns into prema. probably more than I knew back there in 1968. In any case, Nectar of Devotion is a very important book. Prabhupada called it the law book of the ISKCON movement, that he expected all his disciples to know this book quite well. He said that even before you ask questions to me about the Nectar of Devotion, then you should read it at least 3 times. And then if you have any questions, you can ask me. Now, the Nectar of Devotion is slightly different from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is by Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. He very, very systematically goes over the process of devotional service, from the stages of sadhana bhakti, which is divided into raganuga and vaidhi sadhana bhakti, to the state of bhava bhakti, to the state of prema bhakti. And then he explains about what's called bhava. Does anyone here know the 5 different types of bhavas? Yes, true. Yes? What's that? Anubhava. Sanchari bhava. It's not on the tip of everyone's... Excuse me? Yes, Vyabhichari. Vibhava. Vibhava is the first one. It's divided up into Alambana and Udipan. And Alambana is divided up into Ashraya and Vishaya. And then you have Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, Vyabhichari Bhava, and Stayi Bhava. The second part deals with these, what bhava is. Of course, unless we reach the platform of bhava, we may not be able to, it'll seem quite theoretical. But very, very systematically, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī has explained all the details of these different bhavas. And then, so that's in the second ocean. And then the different characteristics of the 5 primary rasas are explained. And the last part of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the 7 indirect rasas are explained. Prabhupada himself, when he wrote the Nectar of Devotion, he emphasized certain things for his disciples who had just joined the Hare Krishna movement, what he felt was most important for their spiritual advancement at that time. Certain things he emphasized and certain things he didn't really explain very completely. That's more thoroughly explained within the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In other words, that this book is specifically meant for the devotees of the ISKCON movement, and more or less, especially for those who were in 1969, 1970. That doesn't mean that our movement has changed that drastically, but it's helpful for those devotees who are reading the Bhakti Rasa, for reading the Nectar of Devotion, to know something about some of the details that are explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that are not explained so completely within the Nectar of Devotion, and to see how Prabhupada has emphasized certain things in the Nectar of Devotion which are not so much emphasized in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In any case, we'll start with the preface. Prabhupada wrote a preface which is his own preface. And the preface deals with this short history of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, how Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī had received it from Lord Chaitanya Mahāprabhu. That at one time, Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī, he met Lord Chaitanya Mahāprabhu, and at that time he instructed him in the philosophy of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So therefore, that's why the course is called Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, because it's actually the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. And after this, after the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, comes the Ujjvala Nilamani, which is this next part, which deals specifically with Madhurya Rasa. Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī doesn't cover very much Madhurya Rasa in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but all the details are covered in the Ujjvala Nilamani. Now, the Nectar of Devotion, as Prabhupada explains, is a summary study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And we can see at the beginning paragraph that Prabhupada explains that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he instructed Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami in the science of devotional service, although at that time, apparently, they were almost like Mohammedans. One was called Dabira Kasa, and the other was Shakara Malik. Because in certain circumstances, Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami were obliged to take up the government service in the government of Hussein Shah. As far as I understand, is that Hussein Shah was threatening both Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami that if they didn't take up the government service, then he would persecute even more the Brahmin community. Therefore, they were obliged to take up the government service. And one of them, they were both ministers. Practically speaking, that they ran the state of Bengal at that time. Hussein Shah was constantly going out and trying to conquer the neighboring kingdoms, and Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami managed his government. But they left their government service and they took up the service of the Krishna consciousness movement. And Lord Chaitanya elevated them to the position of a Goswami. Similarly, Haridas Thakur, although he was apparently also born in a Mohammedan family, he was elevated to the position of Namacharya. In other words, Lord Chaitanya's movement is that anyone who knows the science of Krishna, he can become a guru. It's not really by previous birth that everyone can become elevated by learning the science of devotional service. And especially the importance of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Rupa Goswami first met Lord Chaitanya Prayag, Allahabad, India, at the Dasamedha Ghat. Lord Chaitanya instructed him continuously for 10 days. So we only have 5. But we'll try and cover as much as possible. And this movement and all the devotees within it were principally known as Rupanugas, that were followers of Rupa Goswami. He's our Sampradaya Acharya, Srila Rupa Goswami. He's a principal teacher within our society. Although Prabhupada is the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but Rupa Goswami is our Sampradaya Acharya because it's principally his teachings which are elaborated within our society. And Prabhupada explains in the preface the meaning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He takes each word, Bhakti, Rasa, and Amrita, and Sindhu, and analyzes each one of them. Our word Krishna consciousness, our movement, which is called the Krishna consciousness movement, comes from a verse by Srila Rupa Goswami that's found in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Does anyone know that verse? Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavitamati Kriyatam Kutopi Labhyate Tatra Loyam Muyam Ekalam Janmakoti Sukritarna Labhyate. So bhakti is defined as Krishna bhakti, rasa bhavata mati. So mati means consciousness. So whatever we're conscious of, that's called our mati. Just like Prahlad Maharaj has said, matirna krishne paratakshatova. So matirna krishne, generally people's consciousness is not very much inclined towards Krishna. So when the consciousness is inclined towards Krishna, that's called Krishna Bhakti, Rasa Bhavita. Bhavita means the state of being, and rasa, as Prabhupada will explain here, is like a mellow. So everyone is looking for some mellow. Everyone is looking to absorb their consciousness in some kind of mellow. So when the consciousness is inclined towards the rasa or the mellow of Krishna bhakti, that's called Krishna consciousness. In other words, when we're trying to get enjoyment from loving Krishna through the service to Krishna, that's called Krishna consciousness. Tatra loyam mulyam ekalam. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyatam kuto pi labhyate. Kuta means where, and wherever you can find it, you should try and get it there. Kriyatam kuto pi labhyate. Labhyate means to obtain. So wherever you can obtain it, try and get it there. Janmakoti sukritarna labhyate. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyatam kutopi labhyate tatra loyam. The only price that we'll have to pay is simply our interest to get it. So devotional service means to help us increase the desire to obtain Krishna consciousness. We're performing devotional service simply to help us increase our desire to become conscious of Krishna. Janma koti sukritarna labhyate. Even lifetimes of pious activities will not make us conscious of Krishna. The only way of becoming conscious of Krishna is to perform devotional service in such a way is that our desire to become conscious of Krishna increases. So bhakti means some kind of bhakti, means devotional service. So everyone is engaged in some kind of service. Everyone is devoted to something. Just like in the verse, Taraka apratishta shutiyo vibina nasavari shira matam nabinam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena kata sabhanta. So this is a verse from the Mahabharata, Taraka Apratishta. We can argue about different activities. This is very helpful for us, actually, because generally we're looking at other people, we're trying to figure out what we're doing, and within our minds we may be arguing whether they're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. We may be criticizing them or appreciating them. And sometimes we meet people with a different philosophy, and we may put our philosophy as being more important than their philosophy or more realized or more beneficial, but they may not agree and they may put forward their arguments why what they're doing is correct. So that may go on perpetually. There's no end sometimes for arguments. Although arguments are not considered to be negative, they're considered to be helpful, that we should know our philosophy in such a way as to be able to support it, but they may not be conclusive to others. At the same time, there are many, many Vedic literatures, and different Vedic literatures are meant for different audiences. Not everyone can understand the same Vedic literature or appreciate it. And at the same time, there are many philosophers, and they have their viewpoints. Now the question is, how can we ascertain what the truth is? If we can't ascertain it simply by logic and reasoning, or even by studying different books, or even by taking shelter of different philosophers, then it's advised, dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena kata sabhanta, that everyone has to choose an authority and then follow that authority. It is not that only the members of the Hare Krishna movement are choosing some authority and following that authority. Actually, everyone is choosing an authority and following that authority. Those who are followers of rock music may choose the Beatles or Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones as their authority. Those who are demons, they may choose Kamsa or Hiranyakashipu or Ravana as their authority. Those who are materialists, they may worship, as Prabhupada said during World War II, one man was worshiping Lord Hitler. He had a picture of Hitler on his his altar and he was worshiping him, because during World War II he was making money in the black market all by the mercy of Sri Adolf Hitler. And if one wants to go back to the spiritual world, Prabhupada said, if you want to find Narada Muni, then just find his footprints and then follow them, and then you'll find Narada Muni. So if we want to go back to the spiritual world, then we have to choose someone who's in the spiritual world or on their way to the spiritual world and follow them. And then we'll eventually get there also. So everyone has to choose some leader and then follow their footsteps in order to achieve the results. So everyone has some devotion, some love, and we choose some leader to teach us how to further that love. Presently in society, people may have some mellow, as Prabhupada says, some attraction, some rasa from being a family man or a businessman or the head of the country, a philanthropist. So many different types of mellows may be there in the material world. But the question is, what is the difference between the mellows in the material world and the mellows in the spiritual world? In other words, why are we trying to become conscious of Krishna? What is the difference between trying to become conscious of Krishna and trying to become conscious of our girlfriend or our boyfriend or Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck or something like that? What is the real difference between them? That everyone has a tendency to love someone, Prabhupada says, but that Krishna should be the object of love is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That not only we're trying to develop love or bhakti, but everyone has some love for something. Everyone has a service relationship. That if we don't have any nice relationship with other people, then we get a dog or a cat and we worship the cat or dog. But love has to be there. Prabhupada explains the difference between love in the material world and love in the spiritual world. Love in the material world means two qualities, namely bhoga tyaga and chapala sukha. So bhoga tyaga means alternating enjoyment and renunciation. That no matter how much we love something, we cannot perpetually try to enjoy it. But after a while, people get tired of it. That no one can listen to the same record in the material world over and over again. But devotional service is known as amrita, so that is, it's perpetual. That the more one is absorbing one's consciousness in Krishna, then the more the mellow increases rather than decreases. Nitya nava navana yavana. That means it's always becoming more and more fresh. Just like Srimati Radharani in the spiritual world, it is not that she thinks, oh Krishna, the same old Krishna, I've seen him eternally, I know he has that peacock feather, and getting a little bored here in the spiritual world with the same old Krishna, same old flute. Peacock feather, probably has a garland. No, actually, Srimati Radharani, she's always thinking that maybe I met Krishna for a few moments. Hardly I've ever seen Krishna. So she's always in that mood. This is going to be practically the first time that we're going to meet. That is always fresh, always new. Similarly, Krishna, he always has that feeling also. Everything is always fresh and new. And amrita can also be understood as that whatever we progress in devotional service in this lifetime, then it has a permanent effect. Although we may not sometimes recognize how we're advancing in devotional service, but whatever we are able to advance, that has a permanent benefit. Unlike material activities, we may become very expert at some material field, but at the end of life, everything is finished. Prabhupada would always give the example of one of the former prime ministers of India, who was a very important leader for some 19 years. He was the prime minister of India. But then after leaving his body, Prabhupada said, according to one astrologer that he met, that same prime minister became one of two dogs in Sweden. He didn't even have enough pious activities to get his own bowl. He had to share it with another dog. So his activities were definitely not amrita or perpetual, but at the end of his body, he simply got the reactions because he was lucky to become a dog. And Kapalasukha means temporary. Temporary and very small amount, fleeting pleasure, which is a very small quality or quantity. On the other hand, devotional service is an ocean. It's sindhu, rasamrita sindhu. It's like an ocean that if one drop of bhava, for instance, if we go through the different stages of devotional service. For instance, at the stage of ruchi, there's a certain amount of happiness. The stage of liberation, which is brahmananda, begins at nishta. And if that brahmananda was multiplied billions of times, it would not equal to a fraction, an atomic fraction, of one drop in the ocean of devotional service. So try and imagine that. If the whole ocean of brahmananda was multiplied billions of times, it wouldn't equal to a fraction, an atomic fraction, in one drop in the ocean of devotional service. It's very hard to imagine how much happiness there is in devotional service, but that's why we're trying to go through the austerities that we have to go through, so that eventually we can at least put our little toes into that ocean, see how it feels, see what it's like. This Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the nectar devotion, is specifically meant to teach us how to enter into the ocean of devotional service, the pleasure. Therefore, it's called Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's not a dry book that you're supposed to memorize all the Sanskrit verse, all the Sanskrit, learn all the technicalities, find out all the do's and don'ts that you're supposed to do. Although it's a law book, but it's a law book of devotional service, which is to help us enter or drown in the ocean of devotion, to experience the unlimited happiness of Ladini Shakti. Now, Prabhupada also, in the second part, he explains that everyone has a tendency to love someone. That without loving someone, that no one can actually become happy. Just like for this material body, there are certain necessities. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But the soul, who is different from the body, also has a tendency, has necessity. So the real necessity of the soul is that it has a tendency to love. So without loving, satisfying that loving propensity, no one can actually be satisfied. The nectar of devotion teaches us how to satisfy that loving propensity we have by the art of loving Krishna. That's our basic philosophy. Yata tura mula nishechanena. Tripyanti tatskanda bujo pashaka pranaharat chayatendriyanam sarva tataiva sarvahanam atuteja. Just like if we water the root of the tree, then naturally the water goes to all the leaves and branches. Or by supplying food to the stomach, that naturally all the different parts of the body are satisfied. Similarly, if we love Krishna, then naturally our tendency to love everyone will automatically be there. The nectar devotion will teach us how to love Krishna so that our loving propensity will actually be satisfied. The Prabhupada gives the example that our loving propensity expands just like a light. That in the beginning we try to love our body, or which we take as ourselves, And then later on it's expanded to our mother and father and brothers and sisters, and then maybe our community that we live in, and finally maybe our nation or all humanity. But that loving propensity cannot actually be completely satisfied unless we actually love Krishna. And Prabhupada gives the example that in the Western world, with so much material facility, still the young boys and girls of his time were becoming hippies. They were not actually satisfied. So Prabhupada is appealing that we're not trying to take away your material comforts. You can live comfortably in the material world, but at the same time, he's appealing to the persons then and now that you can only become really happy and satisfied if you revive or invoke your loving propensity towards Krishna. Any questions about this? Yes. Well, loving Krishna means just like when the sun comes up, automatically when the sun's there, we can see everything in the light of the sun. So as soon as we love Krishna, then we'll actually find out who we actually are. It doesn't necessarily have to be in that order, in one sense. Of course, there's nothing but Krishna. But as far as awareness goes, that there are different levels of awareness, known as anamaya, pranamaya, manamaya, vijnanamaya, and ananamaya. Those who are only conscious of food as the supreme, that's at the state of anamaya. And those who take life symptoms, the fact that they realize they're alive, and they try to stay alive, that's just the state of pranamaya. And the state of manamaya, that's the state of civilization. When one starts following rules and regulations of the Vedas, to elevate oneself either materially or spiritually. So one becomes aware at that stage that to become happier, we have to live in harmony with the laws of nature. And when one realizes oneself as a soul, that's just the state of vijnanamaya. One knows that I'm different from the body, and there's a difference between my becoming happy and the body's becoming happy. They're not necessarily the same thing. And at the state of vijnana anandamaya abhyasa, anandamaya, then one becomes aware that real happiness, my real self-interest, is in Krishna's interest. So we're always selfishly interested. The only question is where we see our real self-interest as being. And we realize ourself in relationship to other things, always. Either we realize ourselves in relationship to this body, we take this body or the subtle mind as our worshipable entity or worshipable deity, or we take Krishna as our worshipable deity. But our tendency to love and to serve is always there in any circumstance. So our realization of ourselves is always in relationship to other things. So Krishna consciousness means to take Krishna as the object and therefore simultaneously realize Krishna and realize our real true self. Or we can gradually take it one step at a time and become more or less aware of what we're not, and then in that way gradually find out who we actually are. Anything else? Yes. You mean what's the benefit of knowledge in general? Well, knowledge is just like our goal is bhakti, which is love. So if one is in love with Krishna, then there is no need to know all these things. But if in order to develop our love for Krishna, therefore we have to know what is the process, and that's called sambandha gyan, so we cannot find out what the abhideya is. What is the methodology to develop love for Krishna? And then we come to the state of prayojana, which is the goal, which is Krishna bhakti, or prema bhakti. So generally these things are given just like in the Bhava, the Shantir Avyaratakala Tvam, Viraktir Manasinyataha, Ashabanda Samudkanta, Namagana Sadaruchi, Asaktis Sagunakine, Pritista Vasati Stale, Ityado Gunaya Jana Bhavankure Jane. The symptoms of Bhava define that first there's Shantira. Shanti means forgiveness or peacefulness. Avyartha Kala Tvam, not wasting time. So if we want to make progress and we want towards the goal of Bhava Bhakti, then we have to develop the symptoms, the qualities, such as not wasting time, becoming peaceful, etc. Therefore, a person who is at the state of asakti, if he wants to find out how to make further progress towards the stage of bhava, then he has to develop all these good qualities. Now, for ourselves, for instance, avart avyatar kala tvam, not wasting any time, this is good for us also in order to make further advancement. Become detached, become humble, become interested in Krishna, develop some liking for chanting Hare Krishna. So these all these qualities, although they may be more accessible for a person who is in a higher realm of devotional service, but there are also important qualities for a devotee in any level of devotional service to develop. So by knowing what we're supposed to do, what qualities to develop, for instance, then we can try and develop them under certain circumstances. And if we develop them, then we make progress towards the goal, which is prema. Devotional service is very systematically explained in the Nectar of Devotion. It's, therefore, we should know what our particular level of devotion is, and we should also know what the level of devotion is of other devotees. For instance, if we have to choose someone as our leader, then we have to know who to choose as a leader. So we have to know the qualities. For instance, in modern society, people don't know what the qualities of a leader are. Therefore, they choose anyone as their leader, even though they're untrained. In America, they chose an actor as their president for 8 years. They were more interested in a person putting on a good act than actually having any other qualities. They wanted to be entertained for 8 years. But that's not the qualities of a manager or a kshatriya. Suryam tejas triti daksha yude chapya palayanam danam ishvara bhavascha kshatram karma svabhavajam. So we should know what qualities we have and how to further develop them, and who chooses our leader, and how to ascertain what their qualities are. These things are very helpful. Anything else about this? Now, in the introduction, which you can read about there, that the introduction deals with what's called the Mangala Charana. Mangala Charana has different aspects. One of them is to define the purpose of the book. That's called the Paribhasa Sutra. In many of our books, we have, in all the books, there's Paribhasa Sutras. In this book, the Paribhasa Sutra will be explained in the introduction. Paribhasa Sutra is the verse. If we want to understand other verses within the book, we have to understand them in the context of this Paribhasa Sutra. The Paribhasa Sutra in the Nectar of Devotion is Anya bilasita shunyam jnana karma diravritam anukul yena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. That devotional service is defined as being for Krishna, being done with a favorable mood towards Krishna, with the idea of pleasing Krishna, and it's not covered with any kind of materialistic intentions such as fruitive activities or mental speculation. And it's not done with any kind of, it's done in, not with any personal motivation. We'll go over that next. But the first thing in the Mangalacharna, the introduction, is the Paribhasa Sutra. Explain about that. Also, it gives prayers and gives benedictions. Defines the purpose of the book, gives prayers, and offers benedictions. This you'll find Srila Prabhupada has taken the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and the first six verses are the Mangalacharna prayers. And he's given each one of these paragraphs is a explanation of one of those verses. So Prabhupada, first of all, as Srila Rupa Goswami, invokes auspiciousness and defines what the objective of the book is. The objective of the book is Krishna. Develop Krishna not as Narayan in his majestic aspect, but Krishna in his Madhurya aspect of loving, all loving features. Therefore, I wonder if they have the, we don't have the verse here, but Krishna is defined in relationship to some of the gopis. That he's Taraka and Palika, who are followers of Chandravali. He's absorbed them. That is, they become completely subservient and subordinate to Krishna. And he's captivated all the gopis, and headed by Taraka, Palika, Shyama, and Lalita. Shyama and Lalita, I guess he's captivated Taraka and Palika, that is, they become subordinated by him. And for Shyama and Lalita, who are followers of Srimati Radharani, he's absorbed them, meaning that they've entered into his very intimate pastimes with him. And for Srimati Radharani, he's been captivated by her. That as Srimati Radharani is known as, Krishna is known as Madan Mohan, and Srimati Radharani means Madan Mohan Mohini. Krishna is captivated Cupid, but the one who's captivated by Cupid has been captivated himself by Srimati Radharani. So this book will especially talk about Krishna as the source of all different rasas. Rasaraj, the king of all the different rasas. Akila Rasamurti, the very manifestation of rasa, or different types of mellows. And then Prabhupada prays, let his lordship's grace be on us so that there may not be any hindrance in the execution of this duty of writing the nectar of devotion. Impelled by his divine grace, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sri Rupa Goswami is praying to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or actually Sanatana Goswami, who's his spiritual master, who's inspired him to write the nectar of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But here Prabhupada is praying to his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. And then there's prayers offered to Rupa Goswami and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. I guess we can just read this. What time is the class supposed to be over? Excuse me? 4:10, okay. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. Everyone has a book here? If you don't have a book, maybe you can share it with someone. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada and of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, by whose inspiration I have been engaged in the matter of compiling this summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is the sublime science of devotional service as propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared 500 years ago in West Bengal, India, to propagate the movement of Krishna consciousness. Sri Rupa Goswami began his great book by offering his respectful obeisances unto Sri Sanatana Goswami, who is his elder brother and spiritual master, and he prays that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu may be very pleasing to him. He further prays that by residing in that ocean of nectar, Sri Sanatana Goswami may always feel transcendental pleasure in the service of Radha and Krishna. And then, let us offer respectful obeisances to all the great devotees and acharyas, holy teachers, who compare to sharks and the great ocean of nectar, and who do not care for the various rivers of liberation. Impersonalists are very fond of merging into the Supreme, like rivers that come down and merge into the ocean. The ocean can be compared to liberation, and the rivers to the different paths of liberation. The impersonalists are dwelling in the river water, which eventually comes to mix with the ocean. They have no information, however, that within the ocean, as within the river, there are innumerable aquatic living entities. The sharks who dwell in the ocean do not care for the rivers which are gliding down into it. The devotees eternally live in the ocean of devotional service, and they do not care for the rivers. In other words, those who are pure devotees always remain in the ocean of transcendental loving service to the Lord and have no business with the other processes which compare to the rivers that only glide, gradually come to the ocean. So the first thing is that the devotees who are actually in the ocean of devotional service, they don't go down to the rivers. The rivers are compared to the places where the impersonalists think that by gliding down from the river, you merge into the ocean. But actually, the devotees are compared to sharks, because within the ocean of devotional service, there is variegatedness. And therefore, they don't come, sharks don't generally come, except in Australia, to the places, to the rivers. They remain in the ocean generally. So similarly, the devotees don't go into the rivers where the impersonals are trying to merge into the ocean. But they continuously enjoy in the ocean of devotional service. So this is a prayer. Next is a prayer that Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī gives, that this devotional nectar devotion won't be disturbed, or I guess the readers of the nectar devotion won't be disturbed by the argumentative logic given by the impersonalists, that on the land a volcanic eruption is quite disturbing. But when the same volcano is erupted in the midst of the ocean, it causes little disturbance. So those who are actually merged into the ocean of devotion, they're not really disturbed by the arguments given by the impersonalist logicians. So he prays that by residing in this ocean of devotion, we won't be disturbed by all these arguments by the impersonalists. And then he prays that that he's simply becoming an instrument. In other words, first we've had the prayers to his spiritual master. Prabhupada prays to his spiritual master, to Rupa Goswami, to Sanatana Goswami, to Lord Chaitanya. He's offering prayers. And now we've gotten a benediction that by reading the nectar of devotion, that we won't become disturbed by so many mundane logicians. And now Rupa Goswami humbly prays that he's simply an instrument. He's simply trying to become an instrument to spread Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada says that those who are preachers in the Krishna consciousness movement should also take the same attitude, that we ourselves are not the ultimate doers of our activities, but we're simply trying to become an instrument for the predecessor acharyas and for Krishna. This is not just humility, it's actually reality. And we should try to understand that reality, because in that way we'll be able to appreciate how other preachers are also instruments for Krishna. That a first-class devotee is one who's actually realized that. That within our heart is the super soul. The super soul is giving us remembrance and knowledge and forgetfulness. Therefore, even the materialist is actually an instrument for the illusory energy, that the materialist is not doing anything independently of Krishna or the illusory energy. And similarly for the devotees, they're instruments for the internal energy of and Krishna because of their desire to be so. So those who are acting as instruments for Krishna, Krishna is the ultimate doer, but their glory of the devotee is the fact that they're willing to act as instruments, not getting in the way, so to speak. So anyone who's preaching Krishna consciousness and acting as an instrument for Krishna, they're actually acting just like Krishna. So Rupa Goswami is praying to become an instrument, and he prays that one, as Prabhupada says, one should always consider oneself an instrument like that. One should never take the credit for doing anything independently of the predecessor acharyas or of Krishna. And our aim is to try to do something for suffering humanity. Just like Prabhupada was quite simple in his approach to things, I remember one time I was fanning Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, we simply want everyone to become happy. That is our goal. That as instruments of Krishna, as Krishna, he wants everyone to become happy, so that is our same goal, to make everyone happy. The materialist, he wants himself to become happy, and he's happy to see others unhappy. That if the newspapers, for instance, people buy the newspapers to find out all the trouble that everyone else is in, because that makes them feel more or less that they have not such a bad position because everyone seems to be suffering more than they are in the material world. That makes them enlivened. But the spiritualists, they're happy to see others happy. Para dukkha dukkhi. Therefore, the devotees try to do something to please Krishna. And what pleases Krishna in this material world is to see that his other children are making progress towards the spiritual world. That's Krishna's only happiness here. Prabhupada, he writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that actually the spiritual master, he's not as pleased when his disciples offer him material goods, gifts, or whatever. He's more happy and pleased when he sees that his disciples are advancing the regular principles of devotional service. Any questions about this? Yes.
Maybe a bit tangential, but I was wondering how was Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu received by the community of devotees and then by the impersonalists. I mean, considering that this book that originally that Srila Rupa Goswami was considered an outsider, almost because of his government service, because he needed to be cleansed, purged of his.
Well, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they lived in Vrindavan. And at that time, many of the very important devotees had gathered in Vrindavan, not a whole lot. And they were associating, just like the six Goswamis, they associated with each other and they performed devotional service. Like at Radha Damodara, they used to take prasadam together. So, of course, they were very much interested in whatever Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami were speaking about. But then we know the story of Shyamananda, Naratam, and Srinivas, that they had taken these books to distribute in the eastern part of India, and all these difficulties they went through. At this time, books were more or less written on pieces of leaves. So it wasn't, they didn't have a printing press and they were widely distributed. But Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Jiva Goswami, they had developed quite a reputation amongst the Vaishnavas at that time, who were mostly in the Babaji line. So those persons took it very seriously and they read it. As far as the impersonalists go, I don't think they read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. They generally had nothing to do with it. Yeah, they just disregarded it. Nor was Rupa Goswami so much interested in debating. as we know the story, when one so-called Digvijay Pandit went and he was getting everyone to sign a letter that he had defeated them in argument. So he went to Rupa Goswami and said, you know, I want to debate with you about philosophy. So Rupa Goswami said, no, I'm not interested in debating. So he said, well, or at least sign this paper saying that you've been defeated by me. So Rupa Goswami said, no problems. And he signed the paper. I've been defeated by such and such Digvijay Pandit. And then he left and he met Jiva Goswami. So then Jiva Goswami said, what do you have there? He said, well, I have a letter from Rupa Goswami saying that he was defeated by me. So he said, you defeated Rupa Goswami? Well, she said, I'm just his servant. Why don't you debate with me? So then he debated with Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami completely defeated him. So the man left quite dejected, and Rupa Goswami became very angry at Jiva Goswami, why you've disturbed this person. And he more or less banished Jiva Goswami from his association for some time. So that went on for some time. Jiva Goswami was banished from Rupa Goswami's association, and Jiva Goswami was feeling quite despondent until Sanatana Goswami finally interfered and told Rupa Goswami that you're supposed to be a friend to all the jivas, so why have you rejected this jiva? So then he brought him back into his association. But they weren't interested in name and fame. And how famous they were certainly famous amongst the Vaishnavas and amongst a community, just like, what was his name, Narasingh, or someone who had built the Govinda Mandir? Radha Govinda, what's that? Jai Singh. So he was an important general in the government, and he built the Govinda Mandir because he was quite impressed with Sri Rupa Goswami. So that he did have a following, but he wasn't really interested in just defeating people like the impersonalists. And of course, as we know, before Prabhupada came to the Western world, who ever heard of Rupa Goswami? Maybe one or two scholars or something. But, and even now, how many people really know who Rupa Goswami is? So his fame is just beginning. He's just beginning to be known. People don't even know who Prabhupada is, practically. But gradually these things will be. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the nectar of devotion, will become more and more prominent as this age goes on, at least within the next 10,000 years. I mean, he's not an ordinary person. He's in his Chaitanya Leela, in a sadhaka form, he's Rupa Goswami. And in his siddha form, he's Rupa Manjari. He's the confidential assistant to Lalita Sakhi in Radharani's pastimes. Therefore, when he writes a book like the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it can't be an ordinary book. But it's not meant for ordinary persons either. I mean, if you ask an ordinary person on the street, wouldn't you like a book that explains about all the intricacies of devotional service, they're not generally very much enthusiastic about such a book because they don't even know what devotional service is. But for those who are members who are participating in the Krishna consciousness movement to find out what is the actual science of devotional service, it becomes quite an interesting book. And if we understand how systematically is laid out devotional service, our faith in devotional service will also increase. But the different stages are not only the stage that we're familiar with, namely the stage of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but even the stages of Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, and what goes beyond Prema Bhakti are explained within our literature. Especially after Prema, and the intricacies of prema are explained very nicely within the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And how to get there is explained very systematically also. Anything else? So tomorrow we'll go over the summary of what the nectar of devotion is. Hare Krishna. That it's laid out into four oceans with different parts of the ocean. And then we'll go over the Paribhasa Sutra. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, does anyone know what the Paribhasa Sutra is? Yes, that's good. That's right. And in the Bhagavad Gita, what's the Paribhasa Sutra? What's that? I guess there may be more than one. Prabhupada once seemed to indicate it was Janma Karma Chamedyavyam. Evam yoveti tatvataha tyaktvadeham punarjanma naiti mam eti saorjana. That one who knows the truth of my appearance and activities does not take birth again in this material world but attains to the spiritual world. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? Actually, I guess you can say so many verses of it. It seems Nityananda Sodohito, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda are just like the sun and the moon. They've come in the age of Kali to illuminate everything. What's that? Vande Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sodohito. And here the Paribhasa Sutra we'll go over tomorrow, Anya Bilasita Sunya, which explains about the whole, all the different verses in the nectar devotion can all be understood in relationship to this. Okay, anything else? So again, thank you for coming. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nectar Devotion Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.